Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present Montserrat Episode 1, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 1, The First Settlers, the Arawaks and Caribs. The dawn of Montserrat's inhabitants. Before the eyes of the world had ever gazed upon Montserrat's emerald hills and volcanic peaks, before the cacophony of colonial conquest echoed across the Caribbean, there was silence, broken only by the whisper of wind through towering palms, the rhythmic crash of waves upon black sand, and the nocturnal cries of creatures in the dense rainforest. This land, seemingly untouched, was far from empty. It bore witness to the arrival of the first human settlers, those who would carve life into its untamed landscapes, the Arawaks, Tainos, and later, the Caribs, Kalinago. The Caribbean, long before European arrival, was not a void waiting to be filled but a vibrant network of cultures, trade, and warfare. Montserrat was no exception. It stood as a microcosm of the indigenous Caribbean world, a testament to resilience, adaptation, and the unrelenting pulse of human survival. The journey to Montserrat, Arawak expansion. The origins of the first settlers of Montserrat trace back to South America, along the banks of the Orinoco River in present-day Venezuela and Guyana. Here, the ancestors of the Arawaks, known as the Tainos, developed advanced seafaring skills. Guided by the stars and driven by the promise of new lands, they set out in carved dugout canoes, sturdy yet graceful, across the vast expanse of the Caribbean Sea. Their journey was not reckless wandering. The Arawaks, adept navigators, read the movement of ocean currents and the shifting winds. Their travels followed a pattern, moving along the chain of islands now known as the Lesser Antilles, where Montserrat lay waiting. The island, with its lush forests, fertile volcanic soil, and abundant marine resources, was an irresistible haven. Upon their arrival, the Arawaks named the land Aliawagana, meaning land of the prickly bush. It was a name inspired by the island's thick vegetation and resilient plant life. Here, they built villages along the coast, where fishing, farming, and storytelling intertwined in the daily rhythm of life. Arawak society and way of life. The Arawaks were a people of peace, deeply connected to the natural world. Their villages consisted of circular huts, built with palm fronds and wooden frames, centered around a large ceremonial plaza. These spaces were used for religious rites, storytelling, and tribal councils led by their chief, known as the cacique. Their diet was a blend of ocean and earth. Using handmade woven nets and fishing spears, they harvested the sea's bounty, snapper, grouper, and conch. From the land, they cultivated cassava, maize, sweet potatoes, and tropical fruits such as guava and papaya. The staple cassava, carefully processed to remove toxins, was ground into flour to make cassava bread, a vital food source that could be preserved for long journeys. Arawak craftsmanship was remarkable. Their pottery, adorned with intricate designs, told the stories of their ancestors and gods. Their hammocks, woven from native fibers, provided rest in the warm Caribbean nights. Their kani, chief's house, stood at the heart of the village, a place where wisdom and guidance shaped the community. Yet beyond the visible, the Arawaks lived in a world intertwined with spirits. They believed in zimis, ancestral spirits that resided in sacred stone carvings and guided their people. They performed elaborate rituals to honor nature, offering maize, tobacco, and woven ornaments to the spirits of the land and sea. The arrival of the Caribs, a clash of cultures. While the Arawaks thrived, another group was making its way through the Caribbean waters, the Caribs or Kalinago. Unlike the Arawaks, the Caribs were a warrior society, fiercely independent and deeply territorial. Their reputation as fierce raiders and seafarers spread across the islands. Where the Arawaks sought harmony, the Caribs thrived on conquest. Their war canoes, larger and faster than those of the Arawaks, allowed them to strike swiftly and vanish into the waves. The Caribs saw Montserrat as prime territory, and their expansion brought them face to face with the Arawak settlers. The initial interactions between the two groups were not immediately hostile. There was trade, an exchange of goods, Arawak pottery for Carib-woven baskets, cassava bread for finely crafted weapons. Yet tensions grew. The Caribs sought control, and the Arawaks, despite their peaceful nature, resisted. This resistance led to conflict, and gradually, the Caribs overpowered the Arawaks. As the Caribs took dominance over Montserrat, the island's cultural identity began to shift. Arawak villages were absorbed into Carib society. Those who remained were assimilated, their traditions blending into the new ruling power. The Caribs adopted some Arawak agricultural techniques and pottery styles, while the Arawaks, in turn, incorporated Carib words and survival strategies into their own way of life. The Carib reign and their legacy. Under Carib rule, Montserrat took on a more warrior-oriented structure. Unlike the Arawaks, the Caribs were known for polygamy, with warriors often taking multiple wives. Their society was ruled by a central chief and an elite class of warriors who commanded respect and fear. One of the most misunderstood aspects of the Caribs was the European claim of cannibalism. Early explorers, upon encountering the Caribs, spread exaggerated tales of their brutality, stating that they consumed their enemies. While there is evidence that Caribs may have engaged in ritualistic post-battle consumption of small portions of an enemy's body as a means of absorbing their power, it was far from the savage feasting that colonizers claimed. The Caribs fiercely resisted European invasion. Their warrior spirit made them one of the most formidable indigenous groups against colonial rule. Even as European powers began to claim the Caribbean, the Caribs continued to fight for their lands, refusing to yield easily to foreign domination, foreshadowing the European arrival. For centuries, Montserrat was home to these indigenous civilizations, shifting, evolving, surviving. But change was inevitable. Beyond the horizon, wooden ships sailed closer, carrying men who saw the island not as a home, but as a possession. The arrival of Christopher Columbus and the Spanish in 1493 would begin an era of irreversible transformation, setting the stage for the next chapter in Montserrat's history. The Arawaks and Caribs, who once ruled the island with their hands in the soil and their hearts bound to the sea, would soon face a force unlike any they had encountered before. Chapter 2. The Arrival of Columbus and the Spanish Influence, 1493. A new dawn on the horizon. The year was 1493. The winds of change whispered through the Caribbean Sea, carrying with them the scent of salt, conquest, and an unrelenting thirst for dominance. Montserrat, a verdant jewel in the Lesser Antilles, had known only the presence of its indigenous people, the Arawaks and later the Caribs. But this equilibrium, the delicate balance between man and nature, between rival tribes and the spirit world, was about to be shattered. Across the waves, the unmistakable silhouette of towering masts punctured the horizon. The sails bore the sigil of the Spanish crown. And aboard, Christopher Columbus prepared to etch his name into Montserrat's history. Columbus' second voyage and the discovery of Montserrat. Unlike his maiden voyage in 1492, when he stumbled upon the New World, Columbus' second expedition was a calculated mission of empire building. 17 ships, teeming with over 1,000 settlers, livestock, and supplies, sailed from Cadiz, Spain, destined to claim lands in the name of King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella. On November 11, 1493, Columbus set his sights on Montserrat, naming it after the monastery of Montserrat in Catalonia. It was a name that would endure, yet the indigenous civilizations who had called it Aliowagana for centuries were now on the precipice of obliteration. Upon arrival, Columbus and his crew observed the island's steep cliffs and lush vegetation, but it was eerily devoid of life. Montserrat bore the scars of previous conflict, the result of the Carib-Arawak struggle for dominance. The Spanish, keen on exploiting the land, saw opportunity where others saw bloodshed. However, Montserrat was not the Spanish's primary focus. Their eyes were set on the greater prize, Hispaniola and Puerto Rico, where indigenous populations were more numerous and gold was rumored to be abundant. Thus, Montserrat became a peripheral interest, visited but not immediately occupied. The impact of the Spanish presence. Though the Spanish did not establish permanent settlements on Montserrat, their arrival signaled the beginning of a new and catastrophic era for the indigenous Caribs. Their encounters with the Spanish were marked by violence, deception, and disease. While the Caribs were known for their warrior spirit and resistance, they were no match for the Spanish's superior weaponry and ruthless ambition. Many Caribs were captured, forced into servitude, or outright slaughtered. Those who survived either fled to neighboring islands or were enslaved and transported to serve Spanish colonies in the Caribbean and South America. One of the most insidious effects of European contact was the spread of disease. The Caribs, having lived in isolation from the rest of the world for centuries, had no immunity to old world illnesses. Smallpox, measles, and influenza swept through their villages like wildfire. What warfare could not accomplish, disease did. Within a few decades, the Carib presence on Montserrat was nearly extinguished, leaving the land vulnerable to the next wave of colonizers: the Spanish slave raids and the Caribbean trade network. Although Spain did not settle Montserrat, it still played a role in the slave trade network that fueled its growing empire. The Caribbean islands were seen as a reservoir of labor to supply their more profitable territories in Cuba, Hispaniola, and Puerto Rico. Slave raiders frequently targeted Montserrat, seizing the remaining Carib population and shipping them to Spanish territories, where they were put to work on sugar plantations and in gold mines. In the broader Caribbean context, the Spanish were building an empire of unimaginable wealth, with enslaved indigenous people and Africans at the heart of its economic model. The forced labor system, known as the encomienda system, ensured that Spanish colonists had a steady supply of native labor, stripping indigenous societies of their autonomy and humanity. Though Montserrat itself was spared from becoming a major encomienda hub, it was caught in the vicious cycle of human exploitation. Resistance and the last Caribs of Montserrat. Despite the overwhelming forces against them, not all Caribs were taken without a fight. Some retreated deep into the island's forests, waging a guerrilla war against European invaders. Legends speak of Carib warriors ambushing Spanish raiding parties, using their knowledge of the land to their advantage. These skirmishes, though valiant, were ultimately futile. By the early 1500s, the last remnants of the Carib presence on Montserrat had either been wiped out or absorbed into other indigenous communities on nearby islands. The Spanish, satisfied with their pillaging and having determined that Montserrat lacked the mineral wealth of other islands, abandoned it to its fate. But Montserrat's history was far from over. Its shores would soon welcome a new wave of settlers, ones who would shape its destiny in ways the indigenous people could never have foreseen. Foreshadowing the next chapter, the English and Irish arrivals. Though the Spanish never fully colonized Montserrat, their actions left the island vulnerable to European conquest. The Caribs had been decimated, the land stood largely empty, and a new era of colonization was on the horizon. By the early 1600s, England and Ireland would turn their attention to Montserrat, bringing with them an entirely different model of settlement, one driven by plantation economies, African slavery, and cultural transformation. The Spanish presence in Montserrat was fleeting, but its consequences were lasting. The indigenous civilization that had flourished for centuries was now a whisper in the wind, a ghost lingering in the trees and the ruins of abandoned villages. As European powers jostled for control of the Caribbean, Montserrat was entering a new and perilous chapter of its existence, one that would forever alter its identity and its people. Chapter 3. The English and Irish Settlements in Montserrat, 1600s, 1700s. A new era of colonization begins. By the early 1600s, Montserrat lay vulnerable and nearly uninhabited after the near annihilation of its indigenous Carib population. The Spanish, despite their brief presence, had left little permanent mark, and their focus remained on more lucrative territories in the Caribbean. This left Montserrat open for new settlers, those who would shape the island's identity in ways that still resonate today. The next major wave of settlement came not from Spain, but from England and Ireland. Montserrat, like much of the Caribbean, became a strategic foothold in the battle for colonial dominance between European powers. But unlike many islands where Spanish or French influence remained dominant, Montserrat would take on a distinctly Irish character, making it unique among its Caribbean neighbors. The English claim and Irish migration. In 1632, an Englishman named Sir Thomas Warner, who had already established English control over Street Kitts, turned his attention to Montserrat. Under his leadership, the English claimed Montserrat as part of their colonial expansion in the Caribbean. Warner saw Montserrat as a potential settlement for displaced English and Irish laborers, including indentured servants seeking new opportunities or those forced into exile due to religious and political turmoil. As English settlement began, Montserrat became a haven for Irish Catholics, many of whom had been exiled from neighboring islands such as St. Kitts. Some arrived willingly, hoping for land and a new beginning, but others were transported against their will. Irish prisoners of war, political dissenters, and those who had been forcibly removed from Ireland under English rule were sent to Montserrat, where they worked as indentured servants or laborers on English plantations. Montserrat's Irish population grew rapidly, and by the mid-1600s, it became known as the Emerald Isle of the Caribbean. This Irish presence would shape Montserrat's culture, language, and traditions, many of which still persist today. Life as an indentured servant and the plantation economy. Indentured servitude was a harsh reality. Many Irish settlers were promised land or freedom after working for a period of 5 to 7 years, but the conditions were brutal. They labored under English planters, toiling on sugar, cotton, and tobacco plantations. The system was exploitative and dangerous, with high mortality rates due to disease, malnutrition, and overwork. Though indentured servitude was not the same as slavery, it was a life of extreme hardship. During this period, Montserrat's economy became increasingly dependent on agriculture and trade, particularly the production of sugarcane, which became the dominant cash crop by the late 1600s. Sugarcane plantations required large-scale labor, and while indentured servants initially formed the primary workforce, a darker chapter of Montserrat's history soon followed: the introduction of enslaved Africans. The introduction of African slavery. As demand for sugar grew, so did the need for a more permanent labor force. English planters, following the model established in Barbados and Jamaica, began importing enslaved Africans to Montserrat. By the 1670s, enslaved Africans outnumbered both the Irish and English populations on the island, marking the transition from an economy based on indentured labor to one rooted in slavery. The treatment of enslaved Africans was unimaginably cruel. They were subjected to inhumane conditions, forced to work long hours in the scorching heat, and were routinely brutalized. Unlike indentured servants, enslaved people had no hope of gaining their freedom, and their forced labor sustained the vast wealth of the plantation owners. The African influence in Montserrat grew as enslaved people preserved their languages, customs, and spiritual traditions despite the oppression they faced. Afro-Caribbean culture and Irish traditions intermingled, leading to the development of Montserrat's unique cultural identity. The St. Patrick's Day Slave Rebellion, 1768. The most significant event of the 18th century in Montserrat was the St. Patrick's Day Slave Rebellion of 1768. By this time, enslaved Africans had grown weary of their oppression, and tensions between planters and the enslaved population were reaching a breaking point. On March 17, 1768, as plantation owners and English elites celebrated St. Patrick's Day, enslaved Africans planned to stage a massive uprising. They had carefully organized their attack, hoping to overthrow their oppressors and reclaim the island. However, the rebellion was discovered before it could be executed, and in response, the English authorities carried out swift and brutal punishments. Many of the would-be rebels were hanged, tortured, or exiled. Despite its failure, the St. Patrick's Day Rebellion became a symbol of resistance and resilience. Today, Montserrat is the only country outside of Ireland to celebrate St. Patrick's Day as a national holiday, not just in honor of its Irish heritage, but also to commemorate the bravery of those who fought for freedom. Economic growth and colonial conflicts. As Montserrat's plantation economy thrived, the island became embroiled in the broader geopolitical conflicts of the Caribbean. Throughout the 17th and 18th centuries, the island changed hands multiple times between the British and the French, as both empires sought to control its valuable sugar trade. In 1666, the French briefly seized Montserrat, burning down settlements and attacking English plantations. However, English control was soon restored. The constant warfare and raids by privateers made life on Montserrat unpredictable, but the island remained an important hub in the British colonial system. The Irish legacy in Montserrat. Despite their initial role as indentured servants and exiled laborers, the Irish population of Montserrat assimilated into colonial society over time. Many gained land and wealth, rising to positions of influence in the island's governance and economy. However, Irish planters were just as complicit in the system of slavery as their English counterparts, owning enslaved Africans and participating in the plantation economy. Over time, Montserrat's Irish identity became deeply ingrained in its culture. The island's dialect, music, folklore, and traditions carry echoes of Ireland, blended with African influences. Even today, many Montserratians have Irish surnames, and the island retains strong cultural connections to Ireland. Conclusion: a new Montserrat emerges. By the end of the 1700s, Montserrat had transformed from an uninhabited island into a thriving, plantation-driven society. However, this prosperity came at a tremendous human cost. The Irish, once exiled laborers, had integrated into the colonial elite, while enslaved Africans remained trapped in oppression. Resistance, rebellion, and resilience define this era, shaping Montserrat's identity for centuries to come. The next chapter in Montserrat's history would see the abolition of slavery, the decline of the plantation economy, and the emergence of new political and social movements, setting the stage for the island's modern identity. Chapter 4: The Abolition of Slavery and the Changing Economy, 1800s, Early 1900s. Introduction: The Turning Tide. By the dawn of the 19th century, the tides of change had begun to sweep through the Caribbean. Montserrat, like much of the British West Indies, was entrenched in the plantation economy, built upon the backs of enslaved Africans. However, cracks had begun to appear in the system. The winds of abolition, economic shifts, and social resistance signaled a transformation that would reshape Montserrat's society forever. The fight for freedom was not instantaneous. It was a long and arduous process, filled with revolts, resistance, political debates, and economic upheaval. The abolition of slavery in the British Empire in 1834 marked a significant moment in Montserrat's history, but it was only the beginning of a struggle for true equality and economic stability. In this chapter, we delve into the road to emancipation, its immediate effects, and how Montserrat adapted to the new era. The road to abolition: social unrest and resistance. Although enslaved people in Montserrat had been resisting their oppressors for centuries, through revolts, work slowdowns, sabotage, and escape, the movement for abolition gained momentum in the early 19th century as both enslaved and free black individuals, along with European abolitionists, increased their calls for change. Global and local influences on abolition. The Haitian Revolution, 1791-1804, demonstrated that enslaved people could overthrow their oppressors, sending shockwaves through the Caribbean plantation societies. The abolitionist movement in Britain, led by figures such as William Wilberforce and Thomas Clarkson, pressured the British government to end the transatlantic slave trade and eventually slavery itself. The Amelioration Acts, 1823, sought to improve conditions for enslaved people in British colonies, but resistance to full emancipation remained strong among plantation owners in Montserrat. Local resistance and rebellions. Although Montserrat did not experience large-scale slave rebellions like Jamaica's Baptist War, 1831-1832, there was significant unrest. Many enslaved people engaged in passive resistance, deliberately slowing work, feigning illness, and sabotaging plantation tools and crops. Secret meetings were held in villages, where ideas of freedom were discussed and plans for escape or resistance were formulated. The Slavery Abolition Act of 1833 and Emancipation, 1834. On August 1, 1834, slavery was officially abolished in Montserrat and throughout the British Empire. However, freedom was not immediate. Instead, the apprenticeship system, 1834-1838, was introduced, requiring formerly enslaved individuals to continue working for their former masters for a period of time without fair wages. This system sparked further unrest and protests, and it was eventually abolished in 1838, granting full freedom to Montserrat's formerly enslaved population. The immediate aftermath of emancipation. The end of slavery did not mean an end to oppression. Many formerly enslaved individuals found themselves in economic and social limbo. Limited land ownership. Formerly enslaved individuals had few opportunities to own land, as most fertile land was controlled by former plantation owners and the colonial government. Many were forced into sharecropping and tenant farming, which kept them in cycles of poverty and dependence on former enslavers. Economic instability. Without free labor, plantation owners struggled to maintain the sugar economy, leading to economic decline. Some plantations collapsed, while others turned to alternative crops such as cotton and limes. Many formerly enslaved Montserratians turned to subsistence farming, fishing, and small-scale trade to survive. Social divisions and racial hierarchy. While legally free, Black Montserratians faced institutional racism and social segregation. Political and economic power remained concentrated in the hands of the white elite, and access to education and opportunities was severely limited for the formerly enslaved population. The shifting economy, post-slavery adaptation, agricultural shifts. With the decline of sugar plantations, lime production became Montserrat's primary export in the late 19th century. The rise of peasant farming communities gave Black Montserratians greater independence, as they worked small plots of land to sustain themselves. Some former enslavers tried to enforce low wages and harsh working conditions, leading to labor disputes and migrations. Migration and Montserrat's diaspora. The economic challenges post-emancipation led many Montserratians to seek opportunities elsewhere. Some migrated to Antigua, Trinidad, and later, the United Kingdom, during the 20th century Windrush era. Those who stayed continued to fight for better wages, education, and political representation. Political awakening and grassroots movements. Freed Montserratians began organizing to demand land reforms and voting rights. Early forms of labor unions and community networks emerged, setting the stage for the political changes of the 20th century. Cultural and social transformation. Preserving African heritage. African traditions in music, religion, and folklore remained strong, blending with Irish influences to create Montserrat's unique culture. Spiritual practices, traditional drumming, and folk storytelling flourished in rural communities. Education and religious influence. Missionary schools were established to provide education, but access remained unequal. The Anglican Church and Catholic Church played a role in both controlling and supporting Black Montserratians' social development. Emergence of a free Black society. The period after emancipation saw the slow but steady rise of a free Black middle class. Despite colonial rule, Black Montserratians increasingly asserted their identity and cultural autonomy. Conclusion, toward a new Montserrat. The abolition of slavery in Montserrat was a monumental turning point, but it was far from the end of the struggle. Economic inequality, social oppression, and racial divisions persisted well into the 20th century. However, the resilience of the formerly enslaved population laid the foundation for future generations to fight for justice, equality, and self-governance. In the next chapter, we will explore Montserrat's journey through the late 19th and early 20th centuries, including the labor movements, natural disasters, and political changes that shaped the island's modern history.